Reading from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, First Division, Second Wave, Text 63 and 64. Yesterday, Rupa Goswami was explaining to us that anyone can practice devotional service, even if they're an outcast, and once they've surrendered to the Vaishnav fold and adopted the symbols of a Vaishnava, like the chakra and the shank, then they're considered to be as effulgent and as exalted as a Brahmin. They shine like sacrificial priests. So now he's describing some more in this development about the approach, this is all the approach to practicing bhakti. Who is the goal of bhakti, and who is qualified? Now, in this verse, he discusses some more of the qualification. Ananushtana tato dosho bhaktyanangam prajayate karmana makarana esha bhaktyadikaranam nishiracharato daivat prayaschitam tunochitam anti vaishnava shastranam rahasyam tadvidam natam. This translation. The person qualified for bhakti is at fault for failing to perform all of the important angas of bhakti. But he is not at fault for failing to perform the duties of varna and ashram. If he by chance happens to commit some sin, there is no atonement prescribed for him. This is the opinion of those who know the secret of Vaishnava scriptures. Jiva Goswami's commentary. It has been established previously by Srila Rupa Goswami in the same book that bhakti should be without other desires, anya vilashita shunyam. It also has been shown that all human beings, regardless of their social position, are qualified for bhakti. But some doubt may arise. Yes, all people are qualified. However, at the same time, everyone should follow the rules prescribed for them according to Varnashram. The scriptures tell us that failure to perform those duties is sinful. If they do not perform their prescribed duties, and they simply perform bhakti, then all people will be engaging in sinful activity. That being the case, how can they become pure if they are sinful? By doing atonements, will performance of the undone duties be accomplished? So then, in response to this doubt, Rupa Goswami answers with this verse. And he says, there's no fault. So in this verse, he's saying what Rupa Goswami and Jiva Goswami is saying. Of course, let's read Vishnu Chakravarti's commentary. It is a fault if those qualified for bhakti fail to perform the required angas of bhakti, such as observing Ekadashi or Janmashtami. It is not a fault if they do not perform varnashram activities. If they commit forbidden acts because of the influence of previous Vaishnav aparad, atonement is not required, since these pure devotees do not have a natural tendency for sinful actions. Bhakti alone acts as atonement. This is a conclusion of the Vaishnava scriptures. So, this is a development of the point. Rupa Goswami is saying that anyone can practice bhakti. That was what he said in the first verse. Anyone, no matter what position he's in. And someone might say, yes, anyone can practice bhakti, but you still must observe and follow the rules of your varna. If you are a shudra or brahmin, whatever you are, whatever your ashram and varna, you must follow those particular rules. And if you break those rules, then it's sinful, even though you're performing bhakti. And if you break those rules, then you have to do some what they call prayaschitta, or atonement, to counteract that sin of breaking the rules for your varna. And Rupa Goswami disagrees, and so does Jiva and Vishwanath. He said, no, bhakti is so supreme and so extraordinary that, first of all, It doesn't matter whether you follow the varna rules, ashram rules or not. Because he says that, I mean, there's so many rules according to varna and ashram. Different kinds of, it's called dasavita samskaras. So many samskaras have to be performed. And initiations and so many pujas and yajnas according to the varna and ashram one is in. It's called varna dharma and ashram dharma. The duties of the varna, the duties of the ashram. And then he's saying, no, it doesn't matter. If you break some of those rules, there's no problem. Because these are all rules about just modifying someone's position or securing someone's position in the varna or ashram. And this bhakti is transcendental. Bhakti is all about pleasing the Lord. And this process of bhakti brings one to liberation. But by following varnashram dharma, it's very rare that someone comes to the platform of liberation. Even then, if someone is observing varna and ashram, there must be some mixture of bhakti, or they still won't get liberation. Dharmart kam moksha. So then he says, well, what if someone is performing bhakti and they break some rules? They make some Vaishnava parad, or due to some prarabdha karma, although they're purely following, then they actually commit some sin, then must they do some atonement? Then he says, no, keep doing bhakti. Bhakti for bhakti's sake, keep on doing bhakti. Even there's no separate. In the varnashram system, if you commit some sin, then there's a very elaborate atonement procedures. Some fasting, some yatra, some dan, and giving so many different sites of charity. But that's not, none of that's required in bhakti. People do it sometimes, but he's saying that simply go on with bhakti. Api chet suracharo bhajate mam ananyabhak sarva shamantavya. This verse is there in Gita where Krishna says, sudracharo. One may be performing a very bad activity, sudracharo, very bad activity, but if he's rightly situated in relation to me, he can pick himself up, because when he's performing a sinful activity, he's not connected with Krishna at that time, at least favorably. In a mood of bhakti. Because bhakti and sin are not compatible. But then he realizes, oh, this is very bad due to my bad association, or due to some remaining residual prarabdha karma. I acted in this wrong way or sinful way. But I've neglected my Lord, or I've forgotten my Lord. Let me pick myself up again. Let me continue to serve my Lord. Hear and chant and remember Krishna. And then I'll be forgiven. He'll be forgiven and again connected to the Lord, and the flow of mercy will go on and he'll make progress. So this is one point he's saying here. And then someone might say, because there's a footnote here, that it's in Rupa Goswami's commentary. He says that if one gives up some of the rules and regulations of varna and ashram to take the devotional service, that's okay. But if he's situated in bhakti, we're discussing sadhana bhakti, vaidhi sadhana, once he's initiated in practicing vaidhi sadhana, then if that devotee neglects to follow some of the rules of angas of bhakti, then he'll also be culpable. He'll also be responsible and be punished. And then if he doesn't observe all of them, you know, there's so many rules, 64, and they're even broken down to different sections. Then Jiva Goswami says, actually, even if he neglects some of the other angas of bhakti, it's all right, as long as he engages in these five. And they're of course, these are called the panchanga bhakti, to use a technical term. Panchanga bhakti. And this is Mathura Vasasthali, to live in the holy land of Vrindavan. And one is Nam Sankirtan, to chant the holy name of the Lord. And the other is Sadhu Sangha, to associate with devotees. And Bhagavat Shravan, to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam, and Sri Murti Puja Shadaseva, to serve the deity with faith. So these five angas, or limbs of devotion, these are the most important. So if one only does these five and neglects the other 59, there's no harm. There's no sin. And then you can even reduce these five panchanga to ekanga. Of course, ekanga is really two, but it's described as Ekanga. So out of the 64 major varieties of, or let's say, divisions of bhakti, bhakti angas, we said these five. But then if you don't even want to do these five, you may not be in a situation where you can worship deity or have an interest in that or a ruchi for that. And you may not be in a situation where you can hear the Srimad Bhagavatam. And you may not be in a situation where you can have sadhu sangha. You're in the Catskills or something. You're in some mountain somewhere off by yourself. So then you can do Ekanga Bhakti, and Ekanga Bhakti is described as Nam Sankirtan. It's one of the five, but it's Nam Sankirtan. Of course, Nam Sankirtan includes, ultimately, if it's performed properly, Nam Sankirtan includes three, Shravanam, Kirtanam, and Smaranam. And then even the commentators on this particular principle say that although it's categorized, or it's called Ekanga Bhakti, Nam Sankirtan, it's one limb, chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, actually includes all nine. Because if you analyze the chanting itself as it progresses and becomes progressively purer and more intense, it will go through all these stages, include all these stages. When we're chanting, of course we're hearing and we're chanting, and that hearing and chanting will make us remember the Lord and his consort, on some level or another. Oh, yes, this mantra I'm chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, this is Radha and Krishna, the divine couple of Vrindavan. So I'm remembering in a small way. And then Padasevanam. Then when you're remembering them, then Padasevanam means service to their feet. So, of course, that is that as one progresses in his chanting. But he's chanting, then he may think, oh, this name is not different. Is Binatvam Namanamano. There's no difference between the name I'm chanting and Radha and Krishna. And I can actually serve them when I'm chanting. And this chanting is service to the lotus feet. And let me do it very favorably and very pleasingly and very sweetly and very concentratedly and very diligently and dutifully and carefully so that I avoid all the 10 offenses and come to the platform of pure chanting. And as one comes to the platform of pure chanting, then when he's chanting the holy name, he begins to see the form of the Lord, Nam, Rup, Gun, and Leela. Then when one sees the form of the Lord, one may envision or meditate or think, it's called Manasi Seva, that I'm serving the lotus feet of Nam Prabhu. And he may be inspired to serve the lotus feet of the holy name by distributing the holy name, by going out in Harinam Sankirtan, or by preaching the glories of the holy name, or by even distributing the holy name to others, even at the level. This would be at the level. As part of Sevanam, you might say, would be equivalent of the level of ruchi. And the level of ruchi and bhakti is considered the kanishta level or the beginning level of madhyamadikari. And according to shastras, someone is on the level of ruchi and bhajan, madhyamadikari, he has the competency to distribute the holy name to others. This is the minimal qualification of a guru, spiritual master, madhyamadikari at the kanishta level. It's called madhyam kanishta. Ruchi and bhajan, ruchi for nam. So he's serving the lotus feet. He's inspired by the holy name. Yes, I want to go on Harinam. I want to give this name I'm chanting to others. I want to even initiate them and give this holy name to others. Spread this holy name. Broadcast. Preach. And then from Padasevanam, there's Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Padasevanam, Archanam. So then when one's chanting the holy name on this higher level of ruchi, and then it becomes a sakti, then his attachment is so great that, yes, I'm seeing the Lord's form in my mind, and I want to do some puja to the Lord in my mind, the Maha Mantra, Radha and Krishna. So that's called Manasi Puja. So one can do puja, archanam. Archanam means puja, murti puja, externally, but there's also manasik puja, puja within the mind. And then you can also offer prayers, and as your chanting becomes purer, there's no greater prayer than Shuddha Nam. There's no greater offering of glorification. There's no greater uttama shloka than the Shuddha Nam, the pure chanting of the Maha Mantra. Because all mantras, all stuti, stotras, stavas, prayers, vandanam, etc., are contained in the pure chanting of the holy name. They're all simply expansions of this mantra. Because Radha and Krishna is the supreme shakti and supreme shaktiman. So then it becomes vandanam. So there's archanam, vandanam, then there's dasyam. Then there's Sakyam, Atmanavedanam. So Atmanavedanam is Gopi Bhav. Atmanavedanam is the One who is dedicating their phalakma to the service of Radha and Krishna is the Brajagopis. So this holy name is a continued chant that goes through the stages of Nishtha and Ruchi. And it actually, ultimately, when you're chanting Shudranam and real at the level of Bhava and Prem, one realizes his Siddha Deha. And in his Manasik Deha, his mentally realized or given or understood spiritual body, then he's rendering service to Radha and Krishna's Astakali Lila, and with everything that full body, which is Atmanavedanam, his spiritual siddhadeya, his form, his words, everything. So therefore, Acharyas explain, even this ekanga, if one may perform this ekanga bhakti, nam sankirtan, at the purest level and highest level, he's doing nine limbs of bhakti. Could you follow what I was saying? It was some logic. So now, of course, there are 64 limbs of bhakti. And you may, by simply concentrating and perfecting this one limb of bhakti, you can forget about the other 63, at least externally. It doesn't. Someone just sitting, he's just sitting in the Catskills in his gufa, in his cave. He doesn't do any deity worship. He's not offering any prayers. He's not doing any vandanam. He's not doing any parasevanam. But he's actually doing all of that just by chanting. So Jiva Goswami is saying, if one concentrates on the Panchanga Bhakti, or I'm adding also, or the Ekanga Bhakti, and he neglects to follow the other limbs of Bhakti, there's no reaction. There is no sin there. But if you look into this, if you stay fixed in Varnashram, following the rules, following your position in the Varna and Ashram, and you neglect the rules or regulations, then there is sin involved. And when you perform that sin, then you have to do the prescribed prayaschitta, or atonement. Otherwise you fall down from your position in Varnanashram, or even fall down from human life. Neha vikrama nashoshti pratyavayo navidite svapamapyasa dharmasya chayate mahato bayat. This is a very elementary, seemingly elementary verse of Bhagavad Gita. Neha vikrama nashoshti svapamapyasa dharmasya. Krishna is telling Arjuna, svapamapyasa dharmasya. Oh, Arjuna, and this, what I'm telling you, what I'm teaching you here on Kurukshetra, on the battlefield, this Bhagavad Gita, I'm giving you the yoga rahasya, the secrets of yoga, and this Raja Vidya Raja Guyam. The most secret of all yogas, the most intimate yoga is bhakti yoga, the yoga of divine love and surrender. So when you perform this yoga of bhakti, divine love to the Lord, to me, ultimately, he's saying, then even swapam apyasya dharmasya, even swapam dharma, even a little bit of this bhakti will trayate mahato bayat. It will deliver you, trayate, protect you and deliver you from the greatest fear. The greatest fear is to fall from your position. The greatest fear is to lose the human form of life and become an animal. Because then you can't follow the Varnashram Dharma system. Then you can't follow practically anything. Just follow your senses and the dictates of your lower nature. So this type of result, let's say disastrous result, is not possible for the bhakti yogi, for the practitioner of bhakti. So in this way, there's great assurance for the devotee that, okay, I what about this? Forget about all this angas and rules and regulations and yama niyam of Varna and Ashram, let me do my bhakti. And I know, even I don't perfect my bhakti, if I do whatever little bit I can, then Suchinam Srimatam Gehe Yoga Bhashti Bijayate, I won't lose in this practice of bhakti. I will again be human being and situated nicely. And now, moreover, my bhakti will continue from where I left off. And numerous times, Srila Prabhupada has explained to his disciples that don't think that this is the first time you've practiced devotional service. Of course, we all think that we're very unqualified and we're very fallen and come from very bad backgrounds. But nevertheless, of course, that's also true. But there is some samskara, bhakti samskara, within our chitta. And Prabhupada recognized that. So we have to look at both things. We have to say, yes, somehow or other, it's hard to believe, but somehow or other we did practice bhakti of some degree in our last lives. And therefore we were able to attain the shelter of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. It's nothing by chance. So therefore, even if you fall from the path of bhakti by not completing the process, still you begin next life where you left off. Everyone is familiar with this idea. If we practice, we attain 10% success or perfection in this life, in the line of bhakti, the next life we start at 11%. But if you're in Varnashram system, whatever you attain, then it's lost. You have to come again. If you don't execute your duties properly. So now, continuing on this point, he says in text 265, this is 11th canto, chapter 21, text 2. Sve sve dikare ya nishta sa guna parikirtita vipari yastu dosha syad ubayor esha nishtayaha. Steadiness in one's own position is declared to be actual piety, whereas deviation from one's position is considered impiety. In this way, the two are definitely ascertained. Jiva Goswami's commentary. The same point is made in the Bhagavatam and quoted later in the same book, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Saparamulam bhajata prayasya jaktanya bhavasya hari paresha vikarma yachchot patitam katachind dunoti sarvam vridisan nivishtaha. 11th canto, 542. One who has thus given up all other engagements and has taken full shelter of the lotus feet of Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is very dear to the Lord. If such a surrendered soul accidentally commits some sinful activity, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is seated within everyone's heart, immediately takes away the reaction to such sin. That's a very, very wonderful verse from 11.5.42, showing the unique personal aspect of bhakti. Bhakti is the path of love. So love means persons. Persons, love means two, you and me. In this case, God and the devotee, or God and His servant, Bhagavan and the jiva. So in this pact of love, in this bondage, bond of love, there's responsibility. When there's a loving relationship, there is responsibility. One lover is responsible for the other. And one lover occupies the heart and mind of the other. But one lover's feeling for the other lover, and also often remembering and thinking of the other lover. This is the mutual exchange of lovers. So it also applies in this highest form of love known as bhakti. In this highest form of love known as bhakti, which develops to priti and prema, the Lord is tightly situated within the heart of the devotee, and the devotee is tightly situated within the heart of the Lord. And because of this very confidential, intimate relationship, they care for each other. They look out for each other, and they're responsible for each other. Because this verse is being cited to show some of the differentiation between following the rules and regulations of Varnashram Dharma, which is the basic substratum. Varnashram Dharma is the basic substratum of the Vedic paradigm, or the Vedic civilization. But the point is that in this area of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami is saying that, as I was saying, the Vedic civilization is based on this Varnashram Dharma system, which of course is given by God. Chaturvarnya mayashrisam guna karma vibhagashaha. Krishna says in Gita, this Varnashram system I have given. I have given it, and everyone should follow it, but if you're really intelligent, listen, I want to tell you a secret. Don't let anybody else hear about it. Just between you and me, this Varnashram Dharma is a bunch of crap. don't upset anybody. But since you're kind of a nice guy, I'm going to tell you the facts. Sarva dharman brittacha, mame kam sharanam braja, am tom sarva babhavyo moksha yishini mashacha. Abandon all this don't speak so loud. But that's what I'm saying. Forget about Varna Ashram. Just love me, serve me, worship me, offer obeisances to me. Man manava bhaman bhakto madhyaji man maskuru. Acha. That's the real thing? This is the real thing. Shh, keep it quiet. Don't upset the society, because only a few people know about this. Only a few people have given the secret out. Why is that? Krishna, why is that? Do you know why that is? Because most people, they're jealous, they're envious, and they don't really want to love me. They want to forget about me. So I'm giving them a facility to forget about me, but still remember me mildly and stay happy in the material world. But if you want to stay with me forever, happy with me forever, then this is the program. Bhakti Yoga. Manushanam sahasreshu kaschit yatati siddhaye yatatam api siddhanam kaschit mamati tatvata. So it's like this. So here he's saying that those wise individuals, those Gyanavan mam prapadyante, those that are Gyanavan, those that are very wise, they pick up this secret from the Vedas, secret teachings of the Vedas. This is one of his book titles. And then they pick up this secret, and then they surrender. Atma samarpan, sharanagati, sharanagata. They surrender to Krishna, and by that surrender they capture the heart of Krishna. They enter the personal family of Krishna, they enter the heart region. The surrendered Vaishnavas, the surrendered devotees, they enter the heart region of God, of Krishna. They come in his front yard, so to speak. Like someone who's in your yard, is a very intimate friend, but someone who's outside your boundary wall, in India they have all these walls everywhere, outside your wall, you don't know who they are, what they are, you don't really care. But once someone comes in your area, then it's a very intimate person. So now Krishna's saying, listen, I'm for you. You've surrendered to me, and you become intimate with me. You've entered my heart region, and now I'm entering your heart region. So if there's some flaw in your character, or some misbehavior, or somehow you fall to the wayside, don't worry, I'm there for you. I'm remembering you, because you're my beloved. I'm thinking of you. This I already defined, what is beloved. I'm thinking of you, I'm remembering you, I'm feeling for you. I won't let you go. Kaunteya pratijanihi name bhakti pranashiti. This is the pact of love, the bondage of love. This is, don't worry. It's such a beautiful verse. He's saying, those who have taken full shelter, the lotus feet of Hari, I'm repeating. Even if such a surrendered soul has accidentally committed some sinful activity, his beloved Krishna is situated in his heart. He immediately takes away the reaction to such a sin. So that means this is why this verse is being cited here by Rupa Goswami to show, because someone, after they heard the previous verse where it said that if a devotee does some mistake, he doesn't have to do prayaschitta, which you have to do in Varnashram Dharma, then the next question comes up, well, why not? If you're situated in the Varna Ashram and you do a mistake or you break the rules of the Varna Ashram, then you have to do prayaschitta, you have to do atonement to counteract that sinful activity or that misdeed in the context of your varna and your ashram. But then you're saying, if someone is a devotee, he surrenders to the Lord and he leaves all that responsibility, the varna ashram, and then if he commits some sinful activity, there's no separate atonement. He doesn't have to perform any atonement, he simply practices bhakti. Hey, wait a minute, why does he get off so easy? Why doesn't he have to do any elaborate atonement to counteract his sinful activity? You follow? Then you might have that question. Why? And then here's the answer. Why? Because he has a loving relationship with God. All the Varnashram Dharmas come from him. And the ultimate intimate desire of the Lord is all this Varnashram is meant to bring one to bhakti, bring one to surrender. So if someone immediately goes to that platform, it's like the whole purpose of education is to get a degree, to pass all those final examinations and get a degree in medicine. So someone at the age of 10 says, well, can I stand for the exam? I'm 10 years old. Can I stand or sit or whatever? Can I take the exam for the medical degree? Oh, you're only 10 years old. Well, let me try. So then he sits down and he takes all the examination for the medical degree, and he gets toppers, top honors. Then they have to say, well, you know the subject. You know all the subjects, so here's your degree, 10 years old. He just jumped over all those preliminary grades because of his acumen and his incredible genius. So the same thing, the whole Varnashram Dharma is ultimately, the intention of Varnashram Dharma is to bring one, of course, to moksha, but more than moksha means bhakti. Because this is the highest form of moksha is bhakti. The highest form of mukti is bhakti. Because the lowest level of moksha is brahmasayuja, merging into the Brahman effulgence. Then the intermediate level of moksha is the Vaikuntha liberation, Sulokya, Samipya, Sarupya, etc. But the highest form of liberation is Shuddha Bhakti, Vishuddha Prem, Vishuddha Braja Prem, and situated in a rasa, relationship with Krishna and Braja Dham. That's the highest form of moksha. There's three levels. Everything has hierarchy. So someone immediately says, well, forget about this Varnashram. I want to do this. He didn't just jump over everything. So then Krishna feels compelled to take special notice of that person, special protection. And he enters the heart and says, listen, you've come on my side. Now because you've skipped the grade or whatever they say, you've gone beyond all of these other grades or all these other levels. Now if for you somehow or other misbehave or fall down due to some bad association or parabdha karma, previous sanskaras, then I'm sitting in your heart. I'm monitoring your progress. I'm personally monitoring your progress. I'm personally driving your car. I will take away the sinful activity situated in the heart. And the very practice of bhakti itself is always moment to moment our heart is being cleansed by the Lord. Shrinvatam swakata krishna punya shavana kirtanaha. Krishna is telling that I'm situated in the heart, and as one is performing bhakti, hearing, chanting, remembering, I'm doing a cleansing. So many thousands and thousands of sinful reactions and sinful desires are being eliminated every moment by the all-loving, all-kind, personal Lord in the heart. And every one of us, each individual devotee has his own Lord in the heart. Everyone has a monopoly. It's one lover that can love everyone. But in this world, if you have one lover and then it goes to somebody else, then you're lost. you can't be with that person. But Krishna's in everyone's heart, giving his love to everyone who surrenders to him. In his commentary, Jiva Goswami cites more verses from the 11th canto. Tasmad mad bhakti yuktasya yogano vai madatmanaha jnanam na cha vairagyam praya shreyo bhavet iha. Therefore, for a devotee engaged in my loving service, with mind fixed on me, the cultivation of knowledge and renunciation is generally not the means of achieving the highest perfection within this world. That's what Varnashram Dharma is about. Different depending on the Varna. The higher Varnas, they're always cultivating knowledge. The purpose of cultivating knowledge about God and about life and about yourself is to come to the platform of renunciation. But once one is on the platform of bhakti, he's already showing that he has the highest knowledge. That he understands that this is what I should do, is surrender to Krishna and serve him. That's proof that one has the highest knowledge. Bahunam janmanamante gyanavam mamprapadyante. Vasudeva sarvamati samahatma sadurlava. In the 7th chapter of Gita, verse 19, Krishna is telling that such a smart person, it takes many lifetimes to come to this level of intelligence or this level of knowledge. Yes, Vasudeva sarvamati. And Vasudeva is everything. Therefore, I should surrender to him. That's very rare. Such a person is very rare. So devotees of the Lord, as you can see quite easily, are very rare individuals. Here we're a few devotees sitting here. And the whole world, in the world of 5 billion people, how many Vaishnavas are there? A few million, maybe. So those are the few that are Bahonam Janmanamante, after many births, Gyanavam Mam Prabhadyante, they have attained that knowledge and they surrendered. So it proves they have knowledge, and renunciation is that it goes side by side. When one has bhakti, then automatically knowledge and vairagya come automatically. So renunciation, they renounce. Ultimately, one by one, they renounce everything for the service of Krishna. They begin with karma mishra bhakti, then gyan mishra bhakti, then shuddha bhakti. But renunciation is the basis of devotion. Chaitanya Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was telling in Chaitanya Charitamrita, vairagya vidya nija bhakti yoga. Vairagya vidya nija bhakti yoga. That your bhakti, Krishna bhakti, nija bhakti yoga, vairagya vidya. This vairagya vidya nija bhakti yoga. This bhakti that's being spread, this braja bhakti, this pure devotional service is being spread by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. All your followers, they are full of vairagya and vidya. They are full of renunciation and knowledge by virtue of surrendering and becoming a devotee. That shows that one has so much knowledge in vairagya. Now the next verse he's saying, 11:29, Tavat karmani kurvita na nirvidyeta yavata matkata shavanadova shadda yavan jayate. One should continue to perform the Vedic ritualistic activities until one actually becomes detached from material sense gratification and develops faith for hearing and chanting about me. So in this section of Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, Krishna is instructing Uddhava. It's called Uddhava Gita. And he's actually explaining what is the real purpose of this Varnashram Dharma which Krishna has set up. Varnashram Dharma is meant as a net. You can say you throw a net into the water and you pull it and you catch the fish and leave the water. So Varnashram Dharma is a net to lift up the living entities, to pull the living entities out of the ocean of birth and death by getting them situated in a spiritual direction. So whatever level of faith the human being is on, he can begin to practice Varnashram Dharma. But if he very carefully follows the rules and regulations of his Varnashram, then as this verse says, he will perform different Vedic ritualist activities, and by doing those Vedic ritualist activities, he will gradually become detached from sense gratification, and then his Shraddha will increase. Because these Vedic ritualist activities, yajna, homa, puja, different types of vratas and fastings, Monday fasting for Shiva, Tuesday for Hanuman, Chandrayana vrata, Chaturmasi vrata, by performing these various Vedic activities and Vedic rituals, Devata Puja, Durga Navaratra, Navaratra, Durga Puja, etc., then that is called Sukriti. And by pleasing those Devatas, who are ultimately, they're all Amsas, they're Amshas, they're all limbs and part and parcels of Vishnu. By pleasing them, then they will give their favor. And their favor comes to their worshipper in the form of increased Shraddha. They'll have more faith in the Vedic literature, more faith in the Brahmins, and more faith in God. And that's very good. So now he's saying to Uddhava, he's saying that one should continue to perform Vedic rituals activities, stay in this position of Varna and Ashram, until he becomes detached from sense gratification and develops faith for hearing and chanting about me. Once he has his Shraddha, Shastriya Shraddha, faith in the Bhakti Shastras, faith in the Shastras describing Krishna and Bhakti, and once he's somewhat detached from the intense desire to enjoy materially, then he has some eligibility to actually practice Bhakti. And when that eligibility appears, then he can say goodbye to the Varnashram system. Then he can be a true follower of this injunction, Sarva Dharman Prityaja. So it has its value. There's an intrinsic value to following the Varnashram system. And Krishna is saying, yes, now you can graduate. You're somewhat detached from material sense gratification and you have faith in me, in Bhagavan. Because if one very carefully executes his rules and regulations of Varnashram, the demigods will bless him with faith in Bhagavan. In the beginning, this person doesn't have much faith in Bhagavan, but he may have faith in some devata, because he has faith in sense gratification. He has this intense desires for sense gratification, so then he follows the Vedic injunctions to worship a particular devata who will fulfill that desire for sense gratification. And when he worships that devata, who is only a part and parcel of Krishna, that devi or devata will bless him. Oh, you've been a very good worshipper of mine. I'm very pleased with you. I fulfilled all your desires. I gratified your senses. But now I'm going to create some detachment in you. And moreover, I'm going to create faith in you for my boss, for my worshipful Lord. Because all the devatas are devotees of different levels, some different mixtures of bhakti. So then, by some invisible, unknown way, the person who is a Shaivite or worshipper of Shiva, he suddenly develops an interest in Krishna. Oh, I worship Shiva. My family would always worship Shiva. But somehow, there was this Bhagavad Gita on our shelf, and I started reading it, and I started getting faith in this Krishna. And I don't know how it's happened. I'm a staunch Shaivite. Even my name is Shri Prasad Gupta. Shri Prasad Gupta. Because my father and mother couldn't have any children, so they did Shiva Puja, and they said, Oh, Mahadev, Bacha Dehi, Sutta Dehi, Larka Dehi, give me a son, give me a son, give me a child, Dehi. And my mother became pregnant suddenly by the mercy of Shiva, the Prasad of Shiva. So out of gratitude, my parents named me Shri Prasad Gupta, Vishnu Prasad Agarwal. There's names like this. Devi Prasad. Or we find in our own lineage, you must have heard of someone named Bimala Prasad. Have you ever heard of Bimala Prasad? Who has not heard of Bimala Prasad? Raise your hand. Who is Bimala Prasad? Everyone knows. At least if you don't know, you're free to raise your hand. Bimala Prasad Dutta. Bimala Prasad Dutta is the son of Kedarnath Dutta. So Kedarnath, that's Lord Shiva himself. He's named after Lord Shiva. Kedarnath Dutta. And the name that he's recognized for his devotional accomplishment and his great contribution to the Vaishnava world is Thakur Bhakti Vinod. And Thakur Bhakti Vinod's son, he had many sons and children, and he was going every day to Jagannath Mandir when he was living there, as posted as a government magistrate. And the prasad of Jagannath, after it's offered to Jagannath, it's offered to one of his shaktis, his consorts, and there's a small temple of her outside of the main temple. Because it's Jagannath Balaram Savadra, there's a small temple of one goddess, one devi, was actually a consort of Jagannath, and her name is Bimala. Bimala Devi. Just like here in Kamyavan, we have Bimala Kund. Maybe some of you have visited there. It's a very large kund called Bimala Kund. It means pure. So every day, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and actually what it's interesting, we say, Jagannath Prasad. I went to Puri, I stayed for 2 months, I ate Jagannath Prasad every day. Actually, we're eating Bimala Prasad. Just like if, for example, if we offer food to our Gurudev, we offer to Prabhupada, please you offer this to Radha Vrindavan Chandra. So then we pray and we do the mantras, whatever we do in the puja. And then Radha Vrindavan Chandra accepts that offering. And then Prabhupada takes the remnants, and then if he's kind, he calls his disciples, please you come, you take prasad. Or even I remember Kirtananda Swami. When I was there, I think the last time I was in New Vrindavan was maybe 85 or so, 86. And I think at that time there was RVC temple construction. Maybe my memory is not serving me right, but something like this. They were building this, I don't know, maybe there's even a newer one by now, but there's down the road there was this new temple that was being built. And everybody was throwing plywood and nails. And it was at nighttime, they would build, construction was going on till moonrise, or even after moonrise, 9 in the evening, it was July or August or something, it was pretty warm. And then at the end of the night, they would bring up all these cans of ice cream on top of the roof, big cans of homemade ice cream. And then I looked around, and I was just visiting Radhanath Swami and staying with him, and we were all up there doing construction. And Kirtananda Swami is walking around supervising, walking on the roof way up on way up there. And off the ground, and keeping an eye on everybody, and just kind of putting his energy into every nail, and making sure it was going nicely. And then they brought up the ice cream, and they were serving it out. And I said, where's the plate? I mean, the cardboard plate. Somebody from New Brindavan looked at me and said, "What do you mean played? Just rip a piece of tar paper." And tar paper is something to use in construction. It's some type of very coarse and rough paper. And then that paper is dipped in black tar, which you use to put on the roadway. They dip it in black tar, then it dries out and becomes a little bit brittle. And you put it on, after you put the wood on the roof, they have wooden roofs, and you put this tar paper, then you put what they call shingles, which are like asbestos, stone-coated, whatever they are. And that's a roof. I said, "Tar paper." I said, "Wow, this is really good." And I looked around, everybody's eating ice cream off of tar paper. So I said, "Well, okay, I guess this is a special flavor." When in Rome, do as the Romans. Otherwise, you don't get any ice cream. If you're attached to rules and regulations, then you're out. You don't get any prasad. But the point was that when we offer, that was just an anecdote. But the point is, when we offer a prasad to Prabhupada and he offers the deities, then Prabhupada takes the prasad, and then we take the remnants. Prabhupada, he calls us, as I mentioned, Gurudev calls his sincere, well-behaved disciple. If he's not well-behaved, the guru doesn't call him. "I'm not calling you for prasadam." This is told in Shastra. If the guru calls, we eat. The guru doesn't call, we fast. So then he calls and says, "Take prasad." So when we take, are we taking Krishna prasad? No, we're taking Prabhupada prasad. And that's our joy. I know in the Gaudiya Math, occasionally over the years I had visited some sannyasis. I remember one old sannyasi, Sagar Maharaj, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati sannyasi disciple. And I had visited him in Vrindavan, and then he was had moved to the Yoga Pit in Mayapur, or the Sri Chaitanya Math. And then I saw his old man, 90 years old, and he had one of these little kerosene stoves, and you push air into it and concentrate the air and then light the gas flame. He was cooking sabji and chapati and had great difficulty. He hardly moved. I said, "Maharaj, why are you taking so much trouble to cook? I mean, there's so many young brahmacharis running around this place, and they can just go and get some prasadam." He said, no, I don't want to eat the uchishta. I don't want to eat the uchishta of my Guru Bhai's disciples. I don't want to eat the remnants of my Guru Bhai, my God brother's disciples." And I said, and I thought, I was a little bit stupid or slow at that time, so I didn't quite catch it. Then he explained it to me. He said, "Listen, the acharya here is my Guru Bhai. I'm staying here because I don't have disciples and this and that, and I have to stay somewhere, so he's kindly given me a room. My Guru Bhai is a guru. He's also a disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta. And his disciples are cooking, and they're offering. But they're offering to their guru, who's my Guru Bhai. And just between you and me, I don't think my Guru Bhai is very advanced." This is from his level. "I don't think he's very advanced in devotion, so I don't want to eat his remnants. I want to eat Guru Prasad. So I'm cooking and I'm offering to my guru, Bhaktisiddhanta. And he's offering to Gandharvika Giridhari, and I'm taking Guru Prasad from the hands of my guru, Bhaktisiddhanta. And that way I keep my consciousness pure. I don't want to mix my consciousness with the consciousness of my guru Bhai." So I was thinking, "Oh, this is very interesting." So these are high level types of understandings, and we can't really imitate such things. That's called anukaran. But nevertheless, is that we are taking some kind of prasad. There is only one person. Now you ready? Everyone listening? There's only one person in the entire creation, and manifest, or you can say the spiritual or material creation. There's only one person who's taking Krishna prasad. Who is that? Radha Rani. I guess Krishna, she cooks for Radharani cooks for Krishna. Right? Then Krishna takes. Then he leaves his remnants. And who's the first one that gets his remnants? Radharani. Then after Radharani, who's next in line with the prasad? Sakis. Then after the Sakis, who gets the prasad? The Manjaris. And after that, who gets it? Guru Parampara. evam parampara prasadam. And it comes down, and then hopefully there's some left when we sit down for prasadam. Unfortunately, when we sit down, there's some, they leave us something. All of the, they all take a little bit and leave something. And usually they leave quite a lot. I don't see anybody starving here. So this is the... So Bhaktivinoda, this is a very long tangent here. Back to Jagannath Puri, back to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, back to the Jagannath Temple, and back to Bimala Prasad. So when we're taking Jagannath Prasad, we're actually taking Bimala Prasad, first of all. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur is praying to Bimala Prasad Devi, the very compassionate aspect of Godhead, please bless me with a son, a ray of Vishnu. This part I think everyone knows. Please bless me that my next son becomes a ray of Vishnu. So he's praying and praying to Bimala Prasad, and he got the Prasad, he got the mercy. She blessed him with a beautiful son, a very erudite and pure devotee of the Lord, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So out of gratitude to Bimala Prasad Devi, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he gave the name Bimala Prasad Dutta to his son. And then when he was initiated by Gaurakishore, he received the name Barshabhanavi. Barshabhanavi Devi Dayatya Das. The very Dayatya, the very beloved servant, the very intimate, confidential, and beloved servant of the very beloved, intimate servant of the daughter of Brishabhana Maharaj. Barshabhanavi, that's Brishabhana. Barshabhanavi Devi Dayatya Das. So now we're out of time for this class. I mean, it's only 45 minutes. But we'll just finish this purport. Those qualified for Gyan and Karma are persons without such faith and bhakti. So some people, they want to perform, they want to follow the path of Gyan, Gyan Mark, or the Karma Mark, Karmakan, Gyanakan, Gyan, Karma, Upasana, because they don't have faith. Oh, this bhakti is so. This bhakti is for simpletons. They often say that. These are the people that say, "Oh, bhakti is for simple people. It's for women, shudras, mami partha vipashritya yepi shupapayonya, striya vaishya sata shudras, tepi anti param gatam." Krishna's telling in Gita, this striya vaishya sata shudras. This bhakti is for women and shudras. And businessmen, Agarwals and Guptas. This is not for us. We're smart guys. We're Brahmins. We're Pukka followers of Vedic Dharma. This bhakti is for foolish people. People that can't study Vedanta. So they don't have faith. Though they may begin practicing bhakti by devotee association, they quickly show disrespect. As a result, they fail to gain their goals. In that sense, they become full of fault by giving up that for which they are qualified, namely Gyan and Karma. So he's just saying that some people, they may take up bhakti, but because they don't really have faith in it, then they're kind of lost on both sides. Because they give up Gyan and Karma to take up bhakti, but then they don't have faith in it, so they lost on all sides. They become full of fault by giving up that which they qualified. It's not really clear to me what he's saying here. But the main point of the discussion that will go on tomorrow also, which is some very famous verses that we've heard Prabhupada quote so many times, that one who takes up devotional service, there's no fault. Because this is all the foundation leading up to bhakti. So now he's at the juncture that people might be saying, all right, but... I'm born in India, and I'm a follower of this Vedic culture, Varnashram Dharma, and you're advocating this line of bhakti, which was quite the way it was presented by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was presented as this is the way. Krishna, 5,000 years ago, he mentioned about Sarva Dharma Pratyaja, but practically speaking, no one did it. No one gave up the interest. Varnashram Dharma has been running full speed for the last 5,000 years. No one, it wasn't 5,000 years ago after Krishna spoke to Bhagavad Gita, everyone got a copy and said, oh, well, forget all this, everyone do bhakti. And bhakti was dead. Even now bhakti is growing like gangbusters in India. The bhakti movement. And all these smarta brahmins and all these karmakandi brahmins, they're all shaking in their boots. They're literally frightened. Their whole thing is falling apart. It's just like the Christians when so many people took to alternate paths of self-discovery. In the 60s and 70s in America, all the Christian churches were empty. The Hare Krishnas used to buy up the empty churches and make temples. I don't know about Europe, but in America, half of our temples were our old churches. They're empty. And Prabhupada said, look, and Prabhupada used to give lectures, look at this. You are the same Christian people. In front of me are 500 Christians. And this is your Christian church. But you would never come here. You're not coming here. And now we buy this church and distribute bhakti yoga and teach Krishna consciousness. Now the whole place is packed. It's because you're getting what you're looking for. You're getting satisfied. So for 5,000 years, bhakti was dormant. It was nowhere to be found. It was not being practiced. Then there was a great upsurge of what the historians and writers call the devotional renaissance. The devotional renaissance in the 15th century. All over India, there was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the east, and there was Tukaram in the west of India, and there were so many bhakti saints. The Alawars, of course, they were about 1,000 years ago. But it all happened, it all started emerging. This whole interest in bhakti, Vishnu bhakti, worshipping of Vishnu, became very, very increasingly popular about 1,000 years ago with the Alawars from South India. And then now it's really growing. You turn on the television in India, there's 3 or 4, 5 different spiritual channels, TV channels, cable channels. They're running 24 hours a day, and it's all bhakti, practically bhakti, so much bhakti going on. Devotional bhajans and lectures by acharyas and Bankim Bihari Goswamis, and it's really quite popular. So this is basically all the aftermath or repercussions of the appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his followers. So therefore, these arguments that were given 500 years ago when this book was written, 500 years ago there was still quite a strong sense, a lot stronger than now, a strong sense of an influence of and prevalence of this Varnashram culture. So therefore, Rupa Goswami and his Shiksha disciple, Jiva Goswami, was giving commentary, and also Vishwanath, who gave commentaries in 1680s, 1700, on these same verses. He's very systematically leading us up to the practice of bhakti, dealing with the mindset of the people of the time. Oh, you're introducing this bhakti, and you're saying, just do bhakti, just worship Krishna, hear about Krishna, worship Krishna, serve Him, remember Him. But what about Varna? What about ashram? I mean, I'm a Kshatriya, I come from this Kshatriya background, I come from this warrior background, this Brahmin background. We have so many rules, so many rituals. No, forget it, chant Hare Krishna. So he's very methodically and slowly building his base, building his platform, quoting this Purana and that Purana and so much evidence and support, so people get a very solid understanding of that. Don't be afraid to try it. It's really good. We have fears and inhibitions. We have fears and inhibitions due to conditioning and ignorance. Or let's say our conditional ignorance. We have so many fears and inhibitions that we carry over with us due to conditioning and due to ignorance. So therefore, when we are introduced to something new, we are very skeptical. We are very doubtful. We're very doubtful and skeptical. So this, in his compassionate way, Rupa Goswami is trying to remove all the doubts and skepticisms in a very systematic way. So we'll continue with that tomorrow.